Chapter 4. Property Management. The management profession. Most metropolitan areas have local associations of building and property owners and managers that are affiliates of regional and national associations. All these professional organizations provide information and contacts for all aspects of property management. Here is a list of some well-known associations. Building Owners and Managers Association International, Commercial Real Estate. Building Owners and Managers Institute International, Education Programs for Commercial Property and Facility Management Industries. Community Associations Institute, Homeowners Associations, Condominiums, and Other Planned Communities. Institute of Real Estate Management, Multifamily and Commercial Real Estate Designation. International Council of Shopping Centers Worldwide. National Apartment Association, Multifamily Housing Industry. National Association of Home Builders, all aspects of home building. National Association of Residential Property Managers, single-family and small residential properties. The property manager, in addition to leasing, managing, marketing, and overall maintenance of real estate owned by others, it is also expected that a property manager function as a market analyst, residential leasing agent, accountant, advertising specialist, and maintenance person all in the same day. In addition, the property manager frequently interacts with people in various professions, including lawyers, environmental engineers, and accountants. The property manager has three principal responsibilities. Achieve the objectives of the property owners. Generate income for the owners. Preserve and/or increase the value of the investment property. The property manager carries out the goals of the property owners by making sure the property earns income. This can be done in several ways. The physical property must be maintained in good condition. Suitable tenants must be found, rent must be collected, and employees must be hired and supervised. The property manager is responsible for budgeting and controlling expenses, keeping proper accounts, and making periodic reports to the owner. In all of these activities, the manager's primary goal is to operate and maintain the physical property in such a way as to preserve and enhance the owner's capital investment. Some property managers work for property management companies. These firms manage properties for a number of owners under management agreements. Other property managers are independent. The property manager has an agency relationship with the owner, which involves greater authority and discretion over management decisions than an employee would have. Illinois property managers must be licensed managing brokers under a sponsoring broker because they engage in collecting rent, negotiating leases and rentals, and procuring tenants, among other functions. However, the Illinois Real Estate License Act of 2000 specifically exempts resident managers of apartment buildings, duplexes, and apartment complexes from licensure requirements when their primary residence is on the premises being managed. Illinois permits individuals whose real estate practice is limited to leasing or renting residential property, collecting rent, negotiating leases, and similar activities to obtain a residential leasing agent license instead of the broader scope broker or managing broker license. An individual with a residential leasing agent license must be sponsored by a sponsoring broker. Securing management business. Possible sources of a property management business include corporate owners, apartment buildings, owners of small rental residential properties, homeowners associations, investment syndicates, trusts, and owners of office buildings. The management agreement. The first step in taking over the management of any property is to enter into a management agreement with the owner. This agreement creates a general agency relationship between the owner and the property manager. It defines the duties and responsibilities of each party. It is also a guide used in operating the property as well as a reference in case of future disputes. Like any other contract involving real estate, the management agreement should be in writing. It should include the following. Description of the property. This should include the street address of the property, as well as the legal description. Time period the agreement covers. This would include specific provisions for termination. Definition of the property manager's responsibilities. All the manager's duties should be specifically stated in the contract. Any limitations or restrictions on what the manager may say or do should be included. Statement of the owner's purpose. The owner should clearly state what the manager is to accomplish. One owner may want to maximize net income, while another will want to increase the capital value of the investment. Long-term goals are often of key importance. Extent of the manager's authority. This provision should state what authority the manager is to have in matters such as hiring, firing, and supervising employees, fixing rental rates for space, and making expenditures and authorizing repairs. Reporting. The frequency and detail of the manager's periodic reports on operations and financial position should be agreed on. These reports serve as a means for the owner to monitor the manager's work and operational trends. They form a basis for shaping management policy. Management fee. The fee may be based on a percentage of gross or net income, a fixed fee, or some combination of these and other factors. The fee must be negotiated between the property manager and the principal. In addition, the property manager may be entitled to a commission on new rentals and renewed leases. Allocation of costs. The agreement should state which of the property manager's expenses, such as office rent, office help, telephone, advertising, and association fees, will be paid by the manager. Other costs will be paid by the owner. Antitrust provisions. Management fees are subject to the same antitrust considerations as sales commissions and cannot be standardized in the marketplace. Equal opportunity statement. Residential property management agreements should include a statement that the property will be shown, rented, and otherwise made available to all persons protected by state or federal law. Property manager's responsibilities. Financial reports. One of the primary responsibilities of a property manager is maintaining financial reports, including an operating budget, cash flow report, profit and loss statement, and budget comparison statement. Operating budget. An operating budget is the projection of income and expense for the operation of a property over a one-year period. This budget, developed before attempting to rent property, is based on anticipated revenues and expenses and provides the owner the amount of anticipated profit. The property manager and owner use the operating budget as a guide for the property's financial performance in the present and future. Income includes gross rentals collected, delinquent rental payments, utilities, vending contracts, late fees, and storage charges. Any losses from uncollected rental payments or evictions are deducted from the total gross to arrive at the total adjusted income. Expenses. Fixed and variable expenses include administrative costs, operating expenses, and maintenance costs. Fixed expenses that remain constant and do not change include employee wages, utilities, and other basic operating costs. Variable expenses may be recurring or non-recurring and can include capital improvements, building repairs, and landscaping. Cash flow report. A cash flow report is a monthly statement that details the financial status of the property. Sources of income and expenses are noted, as well as net operating income and net cash flow. The cash flow report is the most important financial report because it provides a picture of the current financial status of a property. The formula for arriving at cash flow is as follows. Gross rental income plus other income less losses incurred equals total income. Total income less operating expenses equals net operating income before debt service. Net operating income before debt service less reserves equals cash flow. Profit and loss statement. This is a financial picture of the revenues and expenses used to determine whether the business has made money or suffered a loss. The statement is created from the monthly cash flow reports and does not include itemized information. A formula for profit and loss statement looks like this: gross receipts minus expenses minus total mortgage payments equals net profits. Budget comparison statement. The budget comparison statement compares the actual results with the original budget, often giving either percentages or a numerical variance of actual versus projected income and expenses. Renting the property. Effective rental of the property is essential to ensure the long-term financial health of the property. The property manager sometimes makes use of a leasing agent as one part of property management. Setting rental rates. Rental rates are influenced primarily by supply and demand. The property manager should conduce a detailed survey of the competitive space available in the neighborhood, emphasizing similar properties. In establishing rental rates, the property manager has four long-term considerations. The rental income must be sufficient to cover the property's fixed charges and operating expenses. The rental income must provide a fair return on the owner's investment. The rental rate should be in line with prevailing rates in comparable buildings in the area. it may be slightly higher or slightly lower, depending on the strength of the property. The current vacancy rate in the property is a good indicator of how much of a rent increase is advisable. A building with a low vacancy rate is a better candidate for an increase than one with a high vacancy rate. A rental rate for residential space is usually stated as the monthly rate per unit. Commercial leases are usually according to annual rate per square foot. A high level of vacancy may indicate poor management or a defective or an undesirable property. On the other hand, a high occupancy rate may mean that rental rates are too low. Whenever the occupancy level of an apartment, house, or office building exceeds 95%, consideration should be given to raising rents. First, however, the manager should investigate the rental market to determine whether a rent increase is warranted. Selecting tenants. Proper selection is the first step in establishing and maintaining sound, long-term relationships with tenants. The manager should be sure that the premises are suitable for a tenant in size, location, and amenities, and that the tenant is able to pay for the space. The residential property manager and any leasing agents employed by the property manager must always comply with fair housing laws in selecting tenants. Although fair housing laws do not apply to commercial properties, commercial property managers need to be aware of federal, state, and local anti-discrimination and equal opportunity laws that may govern industrial or retail properties. Collecting rents. A property manager and any leasing agents employed by the property manager should accept only those tenants who can be expected to meet their financial obligations. In addition to contacting credit bureaus, the selection process now involves criminal background checks, eviction history, calling financial references, and if possible, interviewing the former landlord. The terms of rental payment should be spelled out in the lease agreement, including time and place of payment, provisions and penalties for late payment and return checks, provisions for cancellation and damages in case of non-payment. The property manager should establish a firm and consistent collection plan. The plan should include a system of notices and records that complies with state and local law. Every attempt must be made to collect rent without resorting to legal action. Legal action is costly and time-consuming and does not contribute to good tenant relations. When it is unavoidable, legal action must be taken in cooperation with the property owner's or management firm's legal counsel. Specific legal procedures must be followed in taking legal action against a tenant. In addition, it may be more efficient to utilize a separate lawyer, experienced in evictions, to minimize costs and time it takes to complete the process. Security deposits and interest. Illinois law has specific provisions regarding the maintenance and payment of interest on security deposits. Additionally, local municipalities may have laws regarding interest on security deposits. Property managers must put security deposits in a special escrow account, in the same way that real estate licensees must handle earnest money. The security deposits must be deposited in the escrow account by the next business day after a lease is signed. The security deposit must be recorded in a journal, which contains a chronological record of all deposits and withdrawals of security deposit monies going into and out of the escrow account. The security deposit must be also recorded in a ledger, which is set up for each lease, and contains the information about the security deposit, interest paid, and how much and when the security deposit was returned at the end of the lease. This escrow account is a non-interest-bearing account unless the property is residential with 25 or more units, in which case, interest must be paid to the tenants. The property manager must be able to handle residents who do not pay their rents on time or who break building regulations. When one tenant fails to follow the rules, the other tenants often become frustrated and dissatisfied. Careful record keeping shows whether rent is remitted promptly and in the proper amount. Records of all lease renewal dates should be kept so that the manager can anticipate expiration and retain good tenants who otherwise might move when their leases end. Handling environmental concerns. Property managers must be able to respond to a variety of environmental problems because they have become increasingly important issues. Managers may manage structures containing asbestos or radon or be called on to arrange an environmental audit of a property. Managers must see that any hazardous wastes produced by their employers or tenants are properly disposed of. Air quality issues are a key concern for those involved in property management and design. Building-related illness and sick building syndrome are illnesses that are more prevalent today because of energy and efficiency standards used in construction that make buildings more airtight with less ventilation. SBS is more typical in an office building. Lead-based paint. The 1996 Federal Lead-Based Paint Hazard Reduction Act, Title X, focused more strongly on disclosure and realtor-registered liability. This federal law supersedes any state laws that are not as strong. Real estate licensees leasing properties built before 1978 must ensure that landlords disclose any possible lead-based paint or related hazards. This disclosure form must be completed even in the case of an oral lease agreement. Once an offer for lease is received, the licensee representing the lessor must make certain a completed disclosure of information and acknowledgement form are attached to the lease, showing that the disclosure requirements were met. Finally, a federal lead hazard information pamphlet, obtained through the National Lead Information Clearinghouse at 800-424-LEAD, must be distributed to the tenant before leasing the property. The Illinois Lead Poisoning Prevention Act requires that the owner of any residential building cited by the state as a lead paint hazard give prospective tenants written notice of the danger unless the owners have a certificate of compliance. This act is bolstered in its scope by the federal legislation noted earlier. When a mitigation order is issued to an owner of a building containing lead hazards, the owner has 90 days to eliminate the hazard in a manner prescribed by state law, or 30 days if occupied by a child under the age of 6 or by a pregnant woman. Rental finding services, because of the nationwide demand for rental housing, caused in part by the increased mobility of the U.S. population, there has been a rapid growth in the rental finding service industry. In Illinois, a rental finding service is any business that finds, attempts to find, or offers to find for any person for consideration a unit of rental real estate or a lessee for a unit of rental real estate not owned or leased by the business. Any person or business entity that operates a rental finding service must obtain a real estate license and comply with all provisions of the Illinois Real Estate License Act of 2000. General circulation newspapers that advertise rental property and listing contracts between owners or lessors of real estate and registrants are exempt from this requirement. Rental finding services are required to enter into written contracts with the parties for whom their services are to be performed. The contract must clearly disclose the term of the contract, the total amount to be paid for the services, the services policy regarding the refunding of fees paid in advance, and the conditions under which refunds may or may not be paid, the type of rental unit, geographic area, and price range the prospective tenant desires, a detailed statement of the services to be performed, a statement that the contract shall be void, and all fees paid in advance shall be refunded, if the information provided regarding possible rental units available is not current or accurate, a disclosure that information regarding possible rental units may be up to 2 days old with regard to any individual rental unit, a prospective tenant must be provided with the name, address, and telephone number of the owner, a description of the unit, monthly rent, and security deposit required, a description of the utilities available and included in the rent, the occupancy date and lease term, a statement describing the source of the information, and any other information the prospective tenant may reasonably be expected to need. A rental finding service may not list or advertise any rental unit without the express written authority of the unit's owner or agent. A real estate licensee who violates any of these requirements will be construed to have demonstrated unworthiness or incompetence and will be subject to the appropriate disciplinary measures. Risk management. Enormous monetary losses can result from certain unexpected or catastrophic events. As a result, one of the most critical areas of responsibility for a property manager is risk management. Risk management involves answering the question, what happens if something goes wrong? The perils of any risk must be evaluated in terms of options. In considering the possibility of a loss, the property manager must decide whether it is better to avoid risk by removing the source of risk, control risk by preparing for an emergency before it happens, transfer risk by shifting the risk onto another party, retain risk by deciding that the chances of the event occurring are too small to justify the expense of any other response. An alternative might be to take out an insurance policy with a large deductible, which is usually considerably less expensive. Types of insurance. Insurance is one way to protect against losses. Many types of insurance are available. An insurance audit should be performed by a competent, reliable insurance agent who is familiar with insurance issues for the type of property involved. The audit will indicate areas in which greater or less coverage is recommended and will highlight particular risks. The final decision, however, must be made by the property owner. Some common types of coverage available to income property owners and managers include fire and hazard. Fire insurance policies provide coverage against direct loss or damage to property from a fire on the premises. Standard fire coverage can be extended to include other hazards such as windstorm, hail, smoke damage, or civil insurrection. Consequential loss, use, and occupancy. Consequential loss insurance covers the results or consequences of a disaster. Consequential loss can include the loss of rent or revenue to a business that occurs if the business's property cannot be used. Contents and personal property. This type of insurance covers building contents and personal property during periods when they are not actually located on the business premises. Liability. Public liability insurance covers the risks an owner assumes whenever the public enters the building. A claim paid under this coverage is used for medical expenses by a person who is injured in the building as a result of the owner's negligence. Claims for those hurt in the course of their employment are covered by state laws known as workers' compensation acts. Casualty. Casualty insurance policies include coverage against theft, burglary, vandalism, and machinery damage, as well as health and accident insurance. Casualty policies are usually written on specific risks, such as theft, rather than being all-inclusive. Surety bonds. Surety bonds cover an owner against financial losses resulting from employees' criminal acts or negligence while performing assigned duties. Many insurance companies offer multi-peril policies for apartment and commercial buildings. Such a policy offers the property manager a package of standard commercial coverages, such as fire, hazard, public liability, and casualty. Special coverage for earthquakes and floods is also available. Establishing a sound landlord-tenant relationship. Landlords and tenants' interests are not mutually exclusive, and the two do not need to be in constant conflict. The foundation for good landlord-tenant relations begins with a clear understanding of the rules and regulations and the move-in inspection. Effective servicing of the lease throughout the term of the lease further contributes to sound landlord-tenant relationships. Renewals are an important goal because they save the owner refurbishing costs, vacancy losses, leasing commissions, and renewed concessions. Tenants who are given diligent, fair, and equitable service will renew their leases for an additional term. These economic facts can be used to convince the owner that it is economically more advantageous to provide good service to tenants than to concentrate on short-term financial rewards. The owners want a fair return on their investment in the property, based on current market conditions. Tenants, on the other hand, want the best value for their rental dollar and all the services promised during lease negotiations. Though the manager's first responsibility is to the owner, the successful property manager will encourage both parties to work together, because good tenants are an asset. Move-in inspections at the beginning of the tenancy. The manager should inspect the premises with the tenant to determine if promised repairs or alterations have been made or are in progress. Inspecting with the tenant is a must, especially in a residential tenancy. At that time, the manager and tenant mutually agree to the condition of the premises and note any exceptions on a move-in-move-out checklist. Both the manager and tenant should sign this form, and both should have copies. The same form is then used at the time the tenant leaves. Putting it in writing helps avoid potential disagreements at the end of the lease. Clear understanding of lease terms at the outset of each tenancy. The manager should establish a basic understanding with the tenant on all matters relating to the lease terms. A tenant brochure that outlines all policies and procedures should be given to and reviewed with each new tenant. The tenant should also be told of the penalties for failure to comply with building regulations. The following topics should be addressed. Building rules and regulations. Handling maintenance requests. Procedures for paying rent. Penalties for late payments or no payments. Terminated the tenancy. Security deposits. Manager's personal efforts. The prerequisite for a sound manager-tenant relationship is reciprocal communication. No matter the management specialty, The manger demonstrates goodwill and availability by communicating regularly with tenants by telephone, email, or in person. A newly appointed manager must make a special effort to meet each tenant personally as soon as possible. Newsletters, monthly newsletters or notices are an excellent way of educating occupants about current market conditions, improvements being made to the property, building activities, and other events, such as the appointment or promotion of management personnel. Newsletters can be printed or distributed via email. They can be simple or elaborate, but they should always be timely, accurate, and professional. Cultivating a sense of pride, the astute property manager, whether residential, industrial, or commercial, cultivates pride and a sense of community among the tenants. Living and conducting business in the building can be made as pleasant as possible by offering both tangible and intangible benefits. Amenities such as conference rooms, employee lunchrooms, childcare facilities, game rooms, swimming pools, and tennis courts are useful in marketing the space and in cultivating a stable tenancy. However, the manager's personal efforts can generate friendliness and loyalty among the tenant population, even more than the amenities themselves. A little extra effort and creativity on the part of the manager can go a long way toward developing tenant pride and interest in the building. Occupancy standards and regulations. The lease should set forth the rights and responsibilities of the landlord and the tenant. Briefly, the landlord is obligated to provide the property and usually reserves the right to re-enter and to collect rents. Tenants can expect quiet enjoyment of the rental unit and are obligated to pay rent, not damage the property, and to respect the rights of other tenants. Building rules. Most leases for multiple occupancy buildings have an auxiliary section entitled Building Rules. These rules are usually made part of the lease agreement by reference and provide a more detailed treatment of day-to-day matters, such as the tenant's use of common areas, parking spaces, and hours of building operations. They are designed to protect the condition, reputation, and safety of the property and to promote compatibility among the occupants. Building rules apply to all tenants of the same type. They cannot be arbitrarily or selectively enforced, although rules for upper-floor residential tenants can differ from those for ground-floor commercial stores. The property owner reserves the right to add to or change these rules in a reasonable manner during the term of the lease, after giving proper notice. Many residential leases likewise will have a section entitled Rules and Regulations that contains guidelines for parking, housekeeping, guests, party noise, and other regulative terms. Condemnation. Most lease forms also include a clause providing for equitable cancellation of the agreement in the event that the tenant is denied use of the property because it has been either appropriated or condemned by a government agency. Compliance clause. All leases should include a compliance clause that identifies which party is responsible for complying with any new local, state, or federal regulations. All leases should now contain language that allocates compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act between the parties. Assignment and subletting provisions. Provided that the terms of the lease do not prohibit such activity, a tenant has the right to assign or sublet his or her interest in the property. Assignment of a lease transfers all of the tenant's remaining right in the property to a third party. Subletting transfers suddenly some of the tenant's interest. Most leases prohibit the tenant from assigning or subletting the rented space without the owner's prior written approval. This ensures that the owner has stable and financially secure tenants occupying the property. State statutes, however, have been passed in some jurisdictions modifying the unlimited right to prohibit assignment. Fire and casualty damage. State statutes and lease provisions for fire loss, damage, and property restoration vary widely. When drafting a lease, the manager should keep in mind the types and amounts of insurance to be carries on the property, who will pay the premium, and who will receive the proceeds if there is a loss. When a multiple-tenant property is damaged or destroyed to such an extent that enjoyment of the premises is impaired, the tenant may vacate immediately and notify the owner in writing of the intent to terminate the lease as of the date possession was surrendered. The owner also may be given the option to repair the damage and make a rent allowance to the tenant for a certain period of time. If portions of the premises are still habitable, the tenant can vacate the unusable area and reduce the rent proportionately. If the destruction can be tied to negligence on the part of the owner, some state statutes allow the tenant to recover damages. For the owner's protection, the manager should be certain the lease includes a clause stating that damage caused by a tenant will be repaired without a rent abatement, and that the owner may take legal action against a tenant. Most leases permit the owner to terminate the tenancy if fire completely destroys the property's usefulness. Tenants' obligations: the tenant is required to take good care of the rented space, repair any damage they directly or indirectly cause, and comply with all applicable rules and laws. The terms of the lease should demand that tenants use all plumbing fixtures, elevators, and other facilities in a reasonable manner. Tenants should be prohibited from willfully destroying or damaging the premises, or allowing other to do so, and from disturbing the quiet enjoyment of other tenants. Tenant improvements: tenants should not be allowed to make alterations without advance written consent from the owner, who must be informed of such alterations and protected from all liabilities arising from them. Tenants are required by law to comply with local building and housing code provisions regarding health and safety. In general, most tenant improvements to property are classified as fixtures and become part of the real estate. Commercial tenant improvements: trade fixtures. However, a commercial or industrial tenant may be given the right to install trade or chattel fixtures for business use. These are the personal property of the tenant and may be removed before or upon expiration of the lease agreement, provided that the building is restored to the condition it was in when the tenant took possession. The wording of the clause that allows the tenant to remove trade fixtures is crucial. Some lease forms stipulate that the property must be restored to the condition it was in as of the tenant's taking of possession, whereas others require restoration only to the condition that prevailed as of the beginning of the lease. The minor difference in phraseology can have a major impact on the owner. As an example, one long-term tenant installed fixtures during the first lease and later removed them under the terms of the third lease, which required restoration only to the beginning of the lease. The tenant was obligated to restore only those alterations made under the third lease. Alterations made under the first lease were not covered by the terms of the last lease, so the owner had to bear the expenses for restoration. Security deposit: state laws vary regarding security deposits, particularly how they can be retained, what documentation is required, and the return within a certain period of time. While security deposits are not required by law, some states have imposed a maximum amount allowed for residential security deposits. Prompted by the Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Act, Illinois has passed security deposit statutes. In Illinois, landlords are required to keep security deposits in a federally insured financial institution. In buildings less than 25 units, the landlord is not required to pay interest on the security deposit. The state does not regulate the amount of the security deposit, but some municipalities, such as Chicago, designate, on a year-to-year basis, what the minimum interest rate a landlord has to pay. The lease should also list the amount and kind of security deposit due from the tenant, as well as the conditions under which it will be refunded. In Illinois, if the owner or manager retains any or all of the security deposit to cover damages, the owner or property manager must provide a list of the damages and cost to repair to the tenant within 30 days of the end of the lease. If the landlord or property manager does not provide this list within 45 days, the full security deposit must be returned to the tenant immediately. Personal property: a clause should be included that obligates the tenant to remove personal property from the premises and to clean the rented area at the termination of the lease. Any property left behind is considered abandoned and may be removed from the premises at the tenant's expense. Property owner's obligations: the landlord manager also has certain obligations. Unless a net lease is involved, the owner generally is responsible for maintaining the property and to provide certain services, such as snow plowing, groundskeeping, and cleaning certain public areas. Disclosure and billing: on or before the beginning of a tenancy, the owner should disclose in writing the name and address of the property manager and of the person authorized to receive legal notice on behalf of the owner. The lease should provide that rent, bills, and other notices can be sent to the tenant by registered mail, left at the premises, or delivered personally, as long as they are submitted at the appropriate times. Quiet enjoyment: the owner or property manager grants the tenant a covenant for quiet enjoyment as one of the major benefits in the lease. This right to use also implies a right to possession. Because the tenant is thereby given the exclusive use and possession of the space, the terms of the lease must limit the cases in which the owner or manager is allowed on the premises. Most leases allow the owner to enter in emergencies and for necessary or agreed upon repairs and to show the space to prospective tenants. for a given period near the end of the lease. A clause should be included to permit showing prospective buyers the property in the event the property is placed on the market for sale. Agents managing residential properties should be familiar with the state and local residential landlord and tenant law that may limit the agent's ability to enter the residence at will. The manager should be aware of all applicable notice requirements. Maintaining the premises, the lease and state statutes often indicate that maintenance and repairs are the responsibility of the owner. Most residential and commercial leases, and even some industrial leases, hold the owner responsible for all repairs necessary to keep the premises fit for use. The owner or owner's agent must comply with local building and housing codes by maintaining in good operating condition all elevators and other facilities, as well as electrical, heating, and plumbing systems. Unless the property is very small or under a net lease, the owner tends to the upkeep of common areas, trash removal, window cleaning, and other services promised in the lease terms. Running water, a reasonable amount of hot water, and heat during the required season are usually supplied by the owner unless the tenant has exclusive control over these installations, or unless the building is not required by law to be equipped for these purposes. Under some leases, the owner must furnish utilities. In others, such as the triple net lease, the tenant must pay for any or all utility services. If submetering is legal, the owner may buy utilities such as electricity at a lower rate and resell them to the tenants at the prevailing rate. The manager should try to draft a lease that relieves the owner of responsibility for maintaining the premises and supplying service, if compliance is prevented by conditions beyond his or her control. The lease should further state that if the property is sold, the obligations of the owner cease as of the date of sale, except for the responsibility to return or transfer security deposits to the new owner. Tenants' remedies for non-compliance. Tenants have rights when the landlord agent cannot fulfill the lease obligations. Non-compliance with rental agreement. If the owner or property manager fails to perform the required duties, the tenant may sue for damages or terminate the lease by giving the owner the specified notice for breach of contract. Many leases require the termination proceedings to stop if the owner or property manager begins a good faith effort to remedy the breach by the deadline stated in the termination notice. Remedies will vary depending on the lease. For example, under most residential leases, if the owner or property manager fails to perform the required duties, the tenant may sue for damages or terminate the lease by giving the owner the specified notice for breach of contract. The law may require the termination proceedings to stop if the owner or property manager begins a good faith effort to remedy the breach by the deadline stated in the termination notice. If corrective action is not taken within the specified time, the tenant can sue for damages, obtain a court injunction directing the owner to remedy the breach, or terminate the tenancy. If the owner's non-compliance is willful, the tenant may also recover reasonable attorney's fees. Again, state statutes and the wording of the lease agreement in effect will affect the procedures and outcomes in any situation. Failure to deliver premises. Some states require the owner to convey only the right of possession of the leased premises to the tenant. In others, the owner must grant actual occupancy. If the right to possession or actual possession is not conveyed, the tenant does not have to pay rent. The tenant can terminate the rental agreement or sue for specific performance and thereby obtain possession, reasonable damages, and attorney's fees. It is not uncommon for a property manager to be unable to deliver possession because the previous tenant has not vacated the premises or because repairs and alterations have not been completed. Failure to supply essential services. Constructive eviction occurs when the tenant must abandon the premises due to owner's negligence in supplying essential services. Examples of constructive eviction include failure to supply heat or water, failure to repair premises, or other major defaults that render the premises unusable by the tenant. Constructive eviction is recognized by most state courts as the basis for termination of the lease, for an eviction to recover possession, or for a suit for damages. For the owner's protection, the lease should require the tenant to give notice for any failure and all the owner time to remedy the situation before the tenant claims constructive eviction. Some state statutes prohibit the cutoff of utilities to residential tenants even if rent or utility payments are owed to the owner. Owner's remedies for non-compliance. Tenants can lose their lease if they do not comply with the rental agreement, such as not paying their rent on time or not at all, seriously damaging the property, annoying other tenants by excessive sound, etc. Non-compliance with rental agreement. The landlord is provided with certain remedies in case the tenant fails to meet the terms of the lease. According to most leases, the owner may deliver written notice to the tenant within a specified period, stating the nature of the contract breach and calling for a good faith effort on the tenant's part to repair the breach within a reasonable time to prevent termination of the lease. In Illinois, a 5-day notice applies to monetary breaches and a 10-day notice applies to non-monetary breaches on the part of the tenant. The lease should further state that if the tenant's non-compliance can be remedied by the repair or replacement of damaged items, and the tenant does not make such repairs within a reasonable time after the notice is given, the owner or owner's agent may enter the premises and have the necessary work performed. An itemized bill for the actual and reasonable cost of the work then may be presented to the tenant, due with the next rental payment. The lease also should provide that if the owner chooses to terminate the lease, the bill comes due immediately on presentation. Suit for eviction. Eviction proceedings can be brought against a tenant for several reasons. Non-payment of rent. Illegal possession of the premises after termination of the lease. Unlawful use of the premises. Non-payment of charges attributed to the tenant under the terms of the lease. Certain other breaches of the lease contract. When a tenant has failed to perform in one of these areas, the owner may file a court suit for recovery of the premises after giving the tenant required legal notice. This proceeding is commonly known as a suit for eviction, a suit for possession, or a forcible entry and detainer suit in Illinois. If the court issues a judgment decree for possession in favor of the owner, the tenant must peaceably leave or the owner can have the decree enforced by an officer of the court, who will then forcibly remove the tenant and the tenant's belongings. This process is known as actual eviction default because statutes regarding a tenant's default under the terms of the lease vary from state to state. The lease should include a clause to the effect that if the tenant defaults on rent payments, the owner or manager can terminate the tenancy. Bankruptcy. Because of changing federal bankruptcy laws and court decisions, property managers should review bankruptcy default clauses in leases with an attorney. Advice should be sought to determine proper procedures to follow if a tenant declares bankruptcy. Illegal activities. Language in the lease should be very clear, prohibiting certain activities such as drug trafficking, felony crimes, or threatening other tenants or the manager. Lease renewals. Bargaining factors. Market conditions at the time of expiration will exert a strong influence over the concessions or terms granted under the new lease. In general, bargaining will center on the length of the new lease term, the extent of repairs, alterations, or redecorating to be done, the amount of rent to be paid. Concessions. The actual negotiation of lease renewals follows the same basic pattern as that used to obtain the initial rental agreement. If the general economic trend is inflationary, the manager should probably push for an increased rental rate and a short-term lease or for an escalation clause. During a deflationary trend, the manager should favor a longer-term lease to secure the current higher rental rate for as long as possible. The tenant usually will expect to receive a cheaper monthly rent in return for signing a longer lease at a fixed rent rate, in any type of economic conditions. Construction. The extent of repairs, alterations, or redecorating to be done will be influenced by market conditions, particularly by the competition in the market, and the manager will have to be current on concessions being offered by competitors. If an alteration desired by a tenant will become a permanent improvement to the property, the manager may be able to charge it to a previously allocated fund, which could allow some flexibility in the rental rate. Proper notice. The manager can avoid the irritation, inconvenience, and legal complications of a holdover tenancy by communicating with the tenant well before the lease expires and discussing any changes desired by the owner. Residential tenants can be approached about 90 days before lease expiration, but commercial and industrial tenants should be contacted from 6 months to a year before the expiration date. Rent increases. A 100% occupancy level may indicate that the rental schedule for the building is too low in comparison to the area market and that it is time for an increase. Before deciding on any increase, the manager or leasing agent should survey the market to establish a market rent schedule for the property. Although it may be easier to communicate rent increases to tenants based on increased expenses, ultimately the tenant will tolerate the increase if pricing is competitive with the market. Terminating the tenancy. Required notice. Notice of intent to vacate must be given within a certain period, which should be specified in the terms of most lease agreements. A letter from the manager outlining the procedures tenants should follow when terminating the tenancy should follow. When terminating their tenancy can avoid many misunderstandings. Sometimes tenants are poorly informed as to the notice required and details they must follow when vacating their space. The letter should include a checklist for the tenant, detailing the expected cleaning, post-occupancy inspections, return of security deposit, etc. If a good tenant decides to move, the manager should contact him or her immediately to find out whether the decision was prompted by any oversight on the part of management. If so, the manager should ascertain if the situation can be corrected, thereby retaining a valuable tenant. Even if the tenant's decision is irreversible, the manager should note the reasons behind it and file them for future reference. Exit interview. An exit interview between manager or leasing agent and tenant should be made in person, if possible, and should be a routine procedure. By analyzing the responses of all tenants who have moved recently, the manager can better understand the reasons behind the tenant turnover refusal. To renew, the manager may refuse to renew a lease by giving the tenant appropriate notice of termination. This procedure can be used in lieu of the more expensive and time-consuming court eviction suit, provided the tenant's conduct is not too destructive and the remaining lease term is short. To stay on firm legal footing, the manager who does not renew a lease should have demonstrable proof of just cause for the refusal. It is important for a property manager to document all events and situations which may, in the future, result in a decision to refuse to renew a lease or for use in court for an eviction case. Such termination may not be based on the tenant's race, color, religion, national origin, sex, familial status, or handicap. Additionally, the manager is prohibited from serving notice in retaliation for the tenant's complaints to the authorities about building health and safety issues. Inspection of the premises. Whenever either party terminates a lease, the manager should inspect the space with the tenant after the tenant has removed all personal items and document the condition of the apartment through photos or videos. Whenever possible, the manager should use the same form used for move-in, the one that had been signed by both the tenant and the manager, to determine if any damage has been done to the property and if the unit is being returned in reasonable condition. The tenant should also be required to sign the inspection checklist on move-out. Any deductions to be made from the security or cleaning deposits can be calculated at this time, accompanied with pictures of the damage to be repaired.